tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. What would you think if you found out one of your teachers sang backup vocals for the legendary James Brown? If you're one of the hundreds of Cincinnati students who had Geneva Wood as a teacher, you know exactly how to answer that question. But she didn't only sing backup vocals for the Godfather of Soul. Geneva Wood has devoted her life to the performing arts, both as a performer and an educator for more than 30 years. A new documentary called Cakewalk celebrates her life and career. The Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra will host a screening of the film December 7th. Pianist, composer, and educator Geneva Wood joins me in this recorded interview along with her daughter, Ingrid Wood, director and composer for the film Cakewalk. Welcome to the program to both of you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's such a treat to have you in the studio. Ingrid, growing up, did you know how closely your mom knew James Brown and worked with him?
I did a little bit. My mother, she's super humble. So it really wasn't something that she talked about. If something came up, then yes. I remember one time James Brown would call the house a lot.
He just called the house.
Yeah. And I remember one time he called. I had probably, my mother had probably just let me start answering the phone. I remember telling her, like, some woman from church is on the phone. I thought it was a lady from church. And when she got off, she was like, that wasn't a lady from church. That was James Brown. But that's how she was. You know, she didn't make a big deal about stuff. It was just life for her.
Wow. Well, Geneva, your musical background goes way back. I mean, I've seen you described as a piano prodigy. So when did you start playing piano and when did you start performing publicly?
Well, actually, I started playing when I was 3 years old.
3 years old? How could you even reach the little the pedals?
I would sit down, legs crossed on the floor, watching my mother, because my mother was a musician, and she would be playing, and people would come over who were going to sing in the church. So I would look at her, watch them, and then when they would leave, I would get on the piano, and I'd start trying to doodle and do some things that she was doing. And I guess slowly she realized that she wants to be taught, you know, she wants to have a lessons. And she waited until I was nine. And then I ended up going to Wurlitzer Music Company, which is downtown Cincinnati on 7th and Race. Ah. That was my start as far as formal lessons.
Wow. And when did you start performing publicly?
Well, I can say that she gave me the opportunity, my mother, to direct the junior children's choir.
Was that at church?
That was at church. So we started performing there. What happened was, as I grew older, started a teenage youth group there. And this was in the East End. James Brown sent some people from somewhere around here where we are now. They sent some people from King Records. And they sat there and they listened to us a while. Then they came up to us and asked if we were interested in becoming singers or however we wanted to do at the studio. And I was kind of apprehensive. And always you want your mom's permission. So I asked her, is this okay? And she said, well, apprehensively, she was like, we'll try it out. And so that's how it got started.
Wow. And James Brown, he had to get your father's permission too, didn't he?
Most definitely. Oh, yeah. Oh,
tell
yeah.
us about that.
Oh, well, he drove up into the neighborhood, which at that time was Hoff Avenue, 2818. That's where I was born. That's where I started out my career. And he comes in and asks my father, well, how are you? And he says, and he looks at my father. My father's legs were crossed, and he looked up at him. And he says, well, I'm James Brown. And my dad looked him over and says, well, I'm James Kennard. So kind of let him know this is the real person to give you permission. And things went along really fun from there. You know, and the weird thing was he parked this big, it's like, I can't even think of the name of it. Started with an E, but whatever big car he had. And he parked it right in the middle of the street. So what happens when we came back out, all these kids were all around the car. They were like, James Brown is here. And it really didn't faze me like that. I was just knowing this man came and we're going to do some performing with him.
So, wow. Yeah. Well, Geneva, I understand that when you started working with James Brown, you had some thoughts about what he wanted to name the group. It was you, your sister, and your cousin. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that.
Well, we had come over there many times that I had been putting down tracks for him. He would just call sometimes, wanted me to come. 12 o'clock, he would fly in and say, can you get the girls together? Can you come over? And we would, but my mom said, she'd roll over and she says, you had better be at Withrow High School. I was going to high school on time and homework done. She said,
so this
if
was
you're
like
going to do
midnight,
this,
he'd roll in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we did that. And we got really comfortable with him. And he called me Gigi. And he says, well, I'm going to call you all the Sisters of Righteous. Sisters of Righteous. And I kept thinking, oh, he just didn't think about the grammar. Yeah. And I didn't bug him at first. And I said, well, why don't you try the Sisters of Righteousness? He said, no. It's going to be Sisters of Righteous. I said, but that's the grammatically. I don't know whether you want to. It's the Sisters of Righteous. He just, no other way. And I said, okay, you know, it'll be that. But I kind of know what the grammatical, you know, part should be. And so we let it go. Let it go.
Ingrid, I loved that story in your film. And I guess I wonder, were you at all surprised to learn that your mom had the gumption to question James Brown and the name he wanted to give the group?
Not at all. That is mom. That is her. She's, you know, she's big on grammar. She's big on, you know, did you really mean that? You know, making sure that you represent yourself the way that, you know, that you want to be seen, you know. So, no, it was hilarious, but I was like, that's her. I'm not surprised at all.
That's great. Well, Geneva, what are some of the songs that you and your sister and cousin performed on?
Practically everything. You know, you hear the big payback that they had been putting on all kinds of things, all kinds of movies that you wouldn't even think it would be there. And all of a sudden you'd hear that. We did, oh my goodness, everything. I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Say it loud. I'm Black and I'm Proud. Say it loud. I'm Black and I'm Proud. Some people say we got a lot of malice. Some say it's a lot of love.
He did that in different facets. We did that. We've done so many, and I'm telling you, it's so many, I should have brought the list. It's such a long list. Are You Lonely for Me, Baby? Those are other performers that would come in. Wayne Cochran came in one time, and I remember he had his big bouffant. And we background for him. And a lot of times, people didn't even know, because a lot of times they don't put the persons who write the background, sing the background. You're an unknown. It just makes that group or that person sound really good. So we were just basically into that. And you think whatever song he was singing on, with that background, we had done it.
Well, and for other performers too, like you said, I mean, there were hits beyond James Brown's song where you're in the background vocals.
So many that we just said, okay, let's just do this and get our little bit of piece of money, you know. And this piece of money was a piece of money. It was not much. And I think about it now.
Yeah, how much was
$20
it?
$20 per... Yes. Your eyes are bugged.
$20 for all three of you? Like you had to split 20?
Oh, no. They give us each 20, which was great.
But still, that's not, yeah.
But yeah, that was it. And you'd get it and you were like, oh, good. And then you look back later and say, were we crazy? Was that, you know, what? You know.
Yeah. Well, no, you were great talent at a low rate.
They had a little working engine there that did a lot for them and didn't have to cost too much.
Yeah.
You know? We were cost effective, weren't we?
There you go. Well, I want to ask you about your school days, because you mentioned, did you say you went to Withrow High School?
I went to Withrow.
And you graduated at a time where you didn't even have a high school graduation, right?
No. That was in 1967. There were riots everywhere. And it was civil war in the United States when you think about it. So the principal was afraid. I'm sure he had a board that decided, let's not have this. And we were all distraught. And I don't think I actually walked across the stage at Withrow High School to graduate until it was like 2009 or something strange. Like, it was like, good gracious, that's so long. And there were so many people that had died. Sure. So you missed a lot of your friends that didn't even make it.
Yeah.
So that was, at least we graduated, literally.
Right.
But they did send diploma. We'd all bought our caps and gowns, and that's still all folded up and everything. We never really used that. It was just, it was devastating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I know after high school, you attended University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. What was CCM like for you?
CCM at that time, I paused because as a young Black girl, you knew that they were looking at you like, is she going to make this? Is she going to really cut this mustard? Because not many of us were there. Even when I auditioned, from the very beginning, I took the second piano, Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto, and I said, let me play some of this, the first movement. And when I walked in, there were people there. Sigmund Efron was there on the board. Now, he was also the conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. I mean, there were like the music, some of the music professors were there, piano. And I played, and I could hear them. And I could hear them breathing like just deep, like, okay, why are we hearing this? You know, that's kind of, I played because I wanted to think, I was thinking of my mom. I said, this is what she wants from me, you know, and that's why I did it. So when I walked out the door, I heard sniggling and everything and ha, 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 and all this. And then this next student came in and then I could still hear them. And I heard them say, oh, that was another one of those, don't call us, we'll call you. And I just got so angry. But I said, so this is the way it's going to be here for my first 4 years. And it was sort of like that. It really was. Practicing in a practice room, you could hear the kids coming by and or teachers, and you'd hear people stop. You could hear those footsteps. I keep playing. It just was in me to like, this is a place that I want to be. I want to fulfill my life. And so I'd block the windows so I wouldn't even bother with them. I'd go down to it wasn't a snack room, we called it something else. I'd get some crackers, pop, back upstairs. So I lived in a practice room, went to the classes. There were even teachers that, I mean, when you're like the one in the class, you knew how to block all that out. And you just said, don't worry about that. Just enjoy. There were times when I don't know if you want to go further ahead in that, those years, but when I decided to work on the masters in theory, I'd finished a piece and we all turned our pieces in. I loved the guy that I sat with all the time. He was always my buddy. I was his buddy. We would go out and play, you know, play for each other. If he had a gig, he said, I can't do this, G. Can you do this gig? Sure. And he said, sure. I said, I'm sure. Go play the gig. Come back to that class. And then when we got a paper one time, he looked at mine. And he saw my face was like, I don't have anything on it. What's going on? He got a grade and I didn't. And he finally said, this paper is way better than mine. Could he do this? I said, I don't know, but I'm going to have to figure it out. And I did. And I went through the process. And at some point, the main guy, the head of the dean of that music department told me, this is not going to happen to you again. He says, this paper deserves a grade. It deserves an A. This won't happen to you again. And so the board started reading all the papers that I gave to this particular professor. Mm. And then when I would go to the symphony a lot, because Carmen De Leon and I, we met. He was there as he's like 5 years older. But we met when we were playing at King Records. We met there. And he looked at me like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I don't know. What are you doing here? You know, I'm playing piano. He's playing drums. And he played French horn. So I talked to him about it, too. And he was like, don't let that happen to you. Don't let that happen. Yeah. And to this day, I still remember those feelings. And they just make you like this.
Clench up.
Good Lord. Oh, yeah.
Ingrid, did your mom talk to you much about those challenges when you were growing up? I guess I wonder, did it influence the way you handled your own challenges you faced in life?
She didn't talk about them directly. I think she just tried. From my perspective, I think how she raised her children and her nephew, because he was around us a lot, how she raised us is kind of how we dealt with it, you know, affirming, confidence. She not, you know, not disrespectful, but she let us kind of march to the beat of our own drum and just kind of learn to affirm ourselves and figure out who we are in ourselves so that when we are out in the world, no matter how people, you know, respond or react to you, you have to know that you deserve to be in the room. You deserve to take up space. And I think as a Black person, you know, living anywhere, really, it's an experience that there's nobody that can really teach you about it. You just kind of have to learn yourself, like, oh, this is what they were talking about. Oh, this is why they did that. Because you kind of feel you're in a constant state of trying to feel like you have, like you're having to prove yourself. So you learn, like, no, I don't have to prove myself. It just kind of is, it is what it is, you know. But no, I think how she reared us, it was an indirect way. She's not really the type of person to be like, this is how it is. And it's you realize it like 20 years, 20 years, 30 years later.
Yeah, kind of baked into you, huh?
Yeah.
Not to interrupt her, but all during that time that I was trying to teach her that too, and indirectly, as I was teaching school, and these children were around the same ages. I was exactly the same way with them. You know, I'd sit down if they had some conflicts. I'd sit down and we'd talk about it. And I would always tell them, you can figure out how to get around that. You don't have to get belligerent. You can show them what you can do. And I think I was doing that with Ingrid, with Lauren, and with the kids at the same time. There was no jealousy, no animosity between my kids and theirs, because I think they kind of understood each other.
Yeah, and mom's just always has always had a heart for children and just exposing us to different things, whether we were, you know, came from her womb or whether they were a student, you know, in school. Because I can remember being a little girl, and she would take her. It wasn't for school. She would just take her students to, like, if Annie was in town, and she knew. So I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we're picking up your students and we're gonna go.
Well, and Ingrid, your film interviews a former student of your mother's.
She's a guardian angel. She's, lack of a better word, my mom.
Did you hear a lot of comments like that about your mom growing up, like what you have in your film?
All the time. Because, you know, both my mom worked, so clearly both of my parents worked. And so we were always, after school, we were always with them, whether it had to be at a meeting or a musical, a rehearsal. You know, if we were with my dad, it was going to be a regular meeting. If it was with my mom, it might have been a meeting, but it was going to be a rehearsal or a play or all these different things. Kids were going to be there. So I can remember being like 9 years old at Withrow and these high school kids coming in, being really gentle with myself and my sister and just kind of hearing them like, man, I wish she was my mom. I wish that was my mom. Mm. And, you know, these are kids who, you know, to the rest of society, were probably seen as dangerous and terrifying. But in her classroom, they were, you know, just the nicest people, the most kind people. Even that student, as my music career started, to this day, he'll come set up because he was in her plays, but he would do stagecraft. So he'll come and if he needs to be on behind the scenes talking to the stage manager, like he's just a part of our life, you know. He's like my brother. And several of her students are like that in the city. Yeah. And a lot of them are older. So I always feel like I have somebody looking out or watching me as long as I'm, you know, here in the city. Yeah.
Well, Geneva, you had this amazing career as a performer. We talked about your amazing career as a teacher and all the lives and people you've influenced. What does it mean to you to have your daughter make this documentary about you and tell your story in this way? What was it like to work with her on this? What does it feel like to have this film made?
Well, I'm really enjoying every moment of it. At first I said, why does she want to do it about me? You know, I said, you could do it about anybody else, people around that you've met. And you sure you want to do it on me? She said, Mom, yes, I do. I really do. Which makes me feel just ingratiating about the fact that she wants to do that. And it's almost like it's a form of grace that people don't know they have. And I always feel like, I have always said that. You don't have to shout out, look at me. This is what I do. You don't have to do that. And you see that happen a lot anyway, you know, and you're like, okay, yeah, I got you, I understand, you know, but it's so much better if you continue your modesty and let the people see what you do. You don't have to tell them all the time, this is what I do. And I told my students that all the time. You don't have to tell them what you do. I said, get out there and do it. Do it. And I get so excited when I see kids that are in the movies that I dealt with at SCPA. They're acting. They're singing. I mean, they're just doing all sorts of things. And we have alumni week at the one school where you come back and you get to see some of these students. It's just fun to see what they did, how they developed. I always wanted to get out there and get a little further out. But when my mother passed in my sophomore year, it's like it took the wind out of me.
Yeah.
And I almost let go. I almost let go. But I got back out there and I said, well, if you can't get there, if you can't go to Juilliard, push these kids to go, you know, make the work with them, let them feel, I can feel through them what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So every time I see one of them excel, that's what I want to do. When I see Ingrid excel, that's good. That's what I wanted to see. You know, I didn't want to beat her over the brow and say, I want you to do this because I couldn't do this. No. It's like incorporate yourself into their lives. Their memories sometimes come back, and I think they probably hear things that I told them, and they work through it. Work through that.
Well, I've been talking with pianist, composer, and educator Geneva Wood and her daughter Ingrid Wood, the director and composer for the film Cakewalk. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra will host a screening of the documentary on Sunday, December 7th. You can find a link with more information on wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.